Warriors win the draw. Here comes Wausau West. Jake Hain through center. Hain into the zone, left wing side. Hain thrown in front, looking for DeBio, could not get a stick on it. Panthers get it back. Now through center ice comes Stevens Point. Into the zone, right wing side, Benny Abbott. Moves it on the left. With it is back to Carroll. Carroll, a shot knocked down by Scalcucci. And now the puck picked up by, again, Carroll. I should say Benny Abbott. And now the puck is taken away by the Warriors. Back through center ice comes Jake Hain. Hain lost control of it. Taken back by Spash. Puck will be flipped high into the air. Kept in by Stevens Point and rolled in deep. Puck to the deep left corner. Puck is played by the Panthers. Left faceoff circle. Shot blocked in front. Getting in front of that one for the Warriors was Ethan Rohde, and he'll clear the puck back into the Stevens Point zone. Chased down by the Panthers and Jackson Fleets. Puck back up to center. Chipped ahead by Stevens Point into the zone. Right faceoff circle. Puck knocked away from Jackson Spies to the near side boards. Warriors will get it back to center but could not control it. Alex Fail trying to chase it down for the Warriors. But back into the offensive zone comes Spash. At the right-hand point, Spies fires. Save is made. Rebound and a goal. Easton Katowski with his second of the night. Grabbed the rebound right in front of Julian Scalcucci and able to knock it home. 6 minutes and 54 seconds the time of that goal to make it 6-1. Katowski had one of the three Stevens Point goals in period number two. Face-off drawn back into the Stevens Point zone. Puck is fought for, picked up by the Panthers, banged back up to center. Played at neutral by Tegan Rasmus, he'll dump it in deep. Official scoring. Puck in behind the Stevens Point cage. We'll get the official scoring on that one at the next opportunity. Puck along the far side board, still deep in the Stevens Point zone. Comes loose, picked up by Zach Ostricky for Stevens Point. Now the Panthers get it back to the point, but not out. Kept in at the blue line by Wausau West and Parker Barrero. Puck on the left-hand side. With it is Cooper DePoint. DePoint back to the point. With it is Kuharski. Kuharski a shot right into the center of the pink jersey and the SP on it of goaltender Eric Krzyzewski. And he'll hold on and take the whistle and the stoppage. 9 minutes and 18 seconds to go in the third period. 6-1, Stevens Point with the lead. Face-off is fought for, now back up to center ice. Stevens Point trying to work their way up ice. Grady Miller, now back to the right corner. With it is Miller. Miller holds it. Miller now moves it near side. With it is Carroll. Carroll a shot, looking for a deflection from Schrader, did not get it. Puck along the far side boards. Puck is kept in by Stevens Point. With it is Miller. Miller a shot, gets deflected wide of the pipe. Schrader back to the point. Nope, not able to keep it in at the point. Doing just beyond the blue line, and the faceoff will be at neutral ice. Nearing the midway point of period number three. Just saw the 50th shot on net for Stevens Point tonight. 22 shots on net for the Warriors. Faceoff is battle for at neutral, picked up for a moment by Boleyn, but could not keep control of it. Puck is fought for right below me. Now taken by Ethan Rohde. Rohde will flip it ahead. Now Boleyn. Boleyn lost control of it before he got into the zone. But now chasing it down left wing side is Boleyn. Boleyn lost it again. Picked up by Hendricks Damro. Damro thrown in front. Not able to control it with Krzyzewski, but deflects to the right corner. And another penalty coming up. And it looks like Caden Boleyn will be going into the box for Wausau West. So another power play chance coming up for Stevens Point. 8:22 to go in the game. Warriors got the first one tonight, but since then, it has been all Stevens Point. Panthers along the near side boards, back to the point. With it is Poirier, a shot and a goal. Poirier from the upper slot, able to find the back of the net to make it 7-1. Fourth power play goal of the night for Stevens Point. And some more junk was thrown on the ice by the Wausau West student section. Again, really, there's no need for this right now. Not doing anybody any good. It's going to lead to another delay. Yep. See if they can. They're going to try to do it without the shovel. But a very quick power play goal that time for the Stevens Point Panthers. And with a 6-goal lead, that means there will be a running clock as we get set for the faceoff. Frustrating night for the Warriors. They have not been able to control themselves, I think, very well. Puck is battled for near the blue line. Picked up by Stevens Point. Now Stevens Point back up ice. Official scoring. Drexler and Katowski with the assist on the Poirier goal. At 8:47 to make it 7-1. Now here comes Stevens Point again. Katowski. Katowski in front. Backhand a shot. Goes high and wide of the cage. Looking for the hat trick was Katowski. Puck is played by the Warriors behind their own cage. Picked up now by Xander DeBile. Gets it up the center. Knocked away from Jake Kane. Picked up now by Stevens Point into the zone. Knocked away from Drexler. Picked up now by Owen Pergalski. In behind the cage, Chase Crass. Warriors are cleared. It goes all the way down ice. It was deflected, so no icing on the play. Trying to chase it down is Cooper to point. Goes in behind the cage. Puck is picked up by Jackson Fleece for Stevens Point. Now into the zone comes the Panthers as a shot wide of the cage. Attempted by Grant Molsky. In behind the cage, centered in front. Puck bouncing around. Back to the point, knocked away by DePoint, and now the Warriors get it back to center. Puck rolls through center ice, fighting for it for the Warriors is Parker Barrero, but picked up by Stevens Point. Back through center, with it is Beckett Carroll. He'll take a shot, goes wide of the cage. Puck in behind the net, played there by Carter Drexler. Back to the point, right-hand side, Bialas. Fires it, save is made by Julian Scalcucci. Puck moved to the near side boards. Puck is still fought for along the boards. And now again some pushing and shoving going on as we have a whistle and a stoppage in play. Well, again, there is no love lost in this rivalry. And there's only that potential of another meeting coming up in the playoffs as a penalty has been called on the Warriors. And going into the box will be Cooper DePoint. If the Warriors do face Stevens Point again, they will have to be better in terms of staying out of the box. And when they are in the box or they're on the power play, they'll have to be much better when it comes to the special teams unit. And actually, I think we may be having coincidentals. Yep, DePoint in the box for West, and looks like Salienko again in the box for Stevens Point. Face-off will be to the right of Scalcucci with 6:08 to go. 7-1 Stevens Point. Puck is rolled in deep. Finn Richard will play it for the Warriors. Moved left-hand side to Kate Damrell. Damrell brings it through center, gets into the offensive zone, trying to throw it in front. Chopping at it is Rowan Robbins for the Warriors. Could not get it, and the puck is deflected back to center. Puck is dumped in deep by Stevens Point. Chased down behind the cage by Drake Kuharski for the Warriors. Kuharski's pass does not connect with Hendrix Damrell. Goes all the way down ice. No icing on the play. Chased down by Poirier. Poirier moves it right-hand side to Thomas Oswald. Now Stevens Point back up ice. Into the deep right-wing corner of the Wausau West zone. There's a shot. Goes deflected right through the crease area. Picked up by West on the right-hand side. Pass up the center. Again, not able to connect on a pass on the Warriors. Dumped in deep by Wausau West as we near 5 minutes to go. Long outlet pass does not connect. Goes all the way down ice, and that'll be icing on Wausau West. 7-1 Stevens Point. The result feels almost as bad as the voice here tonight. And again, I apologize. One of those nights where today, unfortunately, got a terrible case of laryngitis and did everything to get it, try to get to the point where you could bring in the broadcast at a high level, but unfortunately not quite at that level here tonight. Stevens Point trying to bring it back up ice. Delayed offside. Nope, it's going to be an offside on Spash. Clock is running with 4 minutes and 15 seconds to go. Warrior boys basketball tomorrow night. Wausau West at Merrill. 7 o'clock airtime right here on 98.9 WXCO. Face-off won by the Warriors. With it is Chase Crass. Gets it ahead. Left-hand side. Tyler Wendell shackles high and wide of the cage. Puck is chased down by Stevens Point. They'll break it out of their own zone. Up through center. Pass right on the stick. Into the zone. Trying to get around the defenders, but getting knocked off the puck. Thomas Oswald. Picked up by the Warriors. Jake Kane will get it through the center. Flip it up to the Stevens Point end of the rink. Taken there by Poirier. Poirier moves it ahead. Now the puck off the near side boards. Into the Wausau West zone. 3.5 minutes to go. Puck up the center with his Tanner Zidzik. Zidzik will take a shot. Blocker stop made by Krzyzewski. Puck in behind the net. Zidzik trying to grab it for the Warriors. Moved into the right corner to Alex Vail. Now moved to the left-hand side. With it for Wausau West is Braylon Stanky, but then the Panthers get it back. Brought back up ice quickly is Stevens Point. Pass attempt gets knocked away. But the puck kept in by Stevens Point, left-hand side. Jackson Spees. Fight for the puck right below me on the near side boards. Picked up by Spash. There's a shot. Goes over the crossbar from Max Mittelstadt. Warriors cleared back to center ice. Puck is dumped in, covered up by Julian Scalcucci. He'll take the whistle and the stoppage in play. 2.5 minutes to go. 7-1, Stevens Point. Face-off left of Scalcucci, won by Spash. Puck on the right-hand side, rolled in below the goal line, right-wing side. Now in behind the Wausau West cage. Warriors trying to stick-handle their way out of trouble, and the puck knocked away. Spees dumped it in below the goal line, played by Finn Richard. Now to Kate Damrell. Damrell now through center ice. Comes Rowan Robbins. Robbins into the zone. Robbins a shot, and a save made. Glove down by Eric Krzyzewski, and he'll hold on. And the Warriors will get an offensive zone draw. Face off left of Krzyzewski. Went on the draw for West. Trying to work his way in front was Hendrix Damrell, but could not get a shot off. Puck now played by Stevens Point. Back up to center ice. Finn Richard at neutral. Richard will just roll it in deep. Puck in behind the Stevens Point cage. Deflects to the near side boards. Puck is turned over. Cade Damrell. Damrell in the right corner. Poke checked away. Cade will get it back. Back to the right point. Kept in there by Shea Jones. Jones will fire it. Got deflected. Save is made and then covered up by Krzyzewski. 50 seconds to go. Both teams will make a line change before the faceoff. We'll get a chance to talk to the head coach of the Warriors, B.J. Brandt, coming up in our postgame. Faceoff taken by Stevens Point. Back to the point and not able to keep it in on the Warriors. With it at neutral is Finn Richards. Puck is battle for at neutral ice. Trying to grab it is Jake Kane for the Warriors. Down to 20 seconds to go. Tough night at the office for the Wausau West Warriors. Puck into the deep left wing corner. Chased down by Jake Kane. He'll get it back to the point. Kept in at the point by Stevens Point. Now deflects up the center. 5 seconds to go. Warriors into the zone. Kane a shot. Stop is made. Jake Kane with a good opportunity in the final seconds. But this one comes to an end. Stevens Point remains undefeated on the season. They improved their overall record to 17 wins and no losses. They are now 7-0 in the Wisconsin Valley Conference. They defeat the Warriors tonight by a score of 7-1. We'll come back, have our postgame show coming up next. This is Wausau West Warrior High School. Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
What's your idea of winter fun? It's hitting the trails after a fresh snowfall and you're thinking new snowmobile. It's time to call CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing fun. If you're thinking new four-wheel drive vehicle to get you to the downhill slopes or the cross-country trails, it's time to call CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing fun. Quick, easy loan applications, friendly lenders, and great rates make CCU the lending leader in financing fun. If your idea of winter fun isn't in the snow, maybe hitting the highway in a new motorhome is the way to go. Just give CCU a call. Financing for motorhomes and winter getaways. When you think fun, think Clover Belt Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Life's too short and winter's too long. Call CCU for your great rate financing. Dial 715-842-5693 or apply online or from your smartphone. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. Local lenders lending local money. Keeping our community strong.
For more than 60 years, Sun Printing has been Central Wisconsin's commercial printer of choice due to their commitment to quality, creative solutions, and dedicated service. Sun Printing's team offers you a wide spectrum of services, whether you need vehicle graphics, offset, digital, large format, graphic design, or mailing. They print everything under the sun. No project is too big or too small, so give Sun Printing a call at 845-4911 or visit them online at sunprinting.com.
Hungry for flavor-packed fun?
Dive into Red Robin's sizzling burgers, mouth-watering fries, and endless options.
Or maybe you're craving the perfect slice.
Then it's Donato's Pizza, your passport to pizza perfection.
Order now and treat yourself to an unforgettable taste experience.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza, 2255 48 Rib Mountain Drive in Wausau.
Call 715-301-0019 or log on redrobin.com.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza.
Yum.
Thanks to the Wausau West Athletic Department for their continued support of our broadcast of Wausau West Warrior Athletics on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. Thanks for listening to our broadcast on the radio, but we want to see you out and about cheering on Wausau West student athletes in action. To find out your next opportunity to see the Warriors, go to wisconsinvalleyconference.org and click on Wausau West.
And Chad Holmes back with head coach B.J. Brandt. Warriors fall tonight 7-1. Well, there's a number of things we could talk about, but one of the things you said in the pregame show was special teams. I mean, I don't know what the negative was, but it was a pretty high negative here tonight for that.
Yeah, I think we gave up at least 4 power play goals. I think it was 5. 2 5-on-3s we didn't score. Major penalty didn't score. And quite honestly, we weren't even close in them. Like, there was not even opportunities to actually score. It's disappointing because you know what these kids can be and for them to show up in this moment. But we talked a lot about in tough moments, sometimes we don't react how we want to. And we talked after the second period, just there's life lessons to be taught here, and you've got to learn them because you guys touched the stove, and the stove's hot. You have the ability to play with this team, but when you take penalties the way that at the rate we took penalties tonight, it's you're not going to give yourself a chance to win.
You took the lead midway through the first period. Your goaltender made some good stops. It was still 1-0 for about 5 minutes. And then it's just hard to you just can't give them 5-minute power plays, can you?
No, you can't. I mean, you look at it. I mean, that game should have been probably 15-1. The way Julian played in the first period, 27 shots, 25 saves in the first period. We gave up 26 shots the rest of the game. You know, and for our guys not to be able to rally and get around that, we make a poor decision on a body check that ends up being a major. A mistake we've made before. So, like, that's the frustrating part as a coach when you try to talk kids through a situation and there's just not a lot of response. So this is one that hopefully we can flush a little bit because the guys got to pick a direction right now. I mean, this is one that you could hang on or thankfully there's enough time between the next game and this that we get to hopefully flush it and get back to playing the way we want them to play.
For hockey players especially, there's a thin line, isn't there, between the aggression you need to be successful, but also that line that you put yourself in bad positions, this is what happens. I mean, you don't want to take your kids' aggression away, do you? But at the same time, you have to be a little bit wiser and experienced.
Well, the game is won and lost between your ears.
Yes.
That's the reality of it. And we didn't win it between our ears tonight. We lost control of our emotions multiple times, and those are life lessons. You know, there's going to be times in your life you're going to be upset. We can't react that way. At no point in your life is it okay to react that way. And we did, and hopefully we learned some stuff. I mean, they're a really good hockey team. When you give them the opportunities we gave them tonight, they took advantage of it for sure.
I guess I'll let you go because that's a rough one tonight. And then we had a chance maybe to get back into it. The pipe is unkind. It was one of those nights.
Yeah, I mean, we had some good chances. Right. I mean, Shea hits a crossbar. We hit the top of the knob from the top. I mean,
yes,
that makes it a 4-3 game, yes, early in the second. And, you know, but you got to earn those things. Right. You can't hope for luck in a game like this. You got to go earn it. And we didn't earn it tonight.
All right. Well, we'll see you. We'll go to Hobbs next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Shea.
Thanks, Coach. B.J. Brandt of the Warriors. 7-1 tonight. The loss for the Warriors. Goal for Wausau West, the first goal of the game at 8:18 of the first period. Chase Crass with the lamp with Owen Pragalski's assist. Then after that, it was 7 consecutive Stevens Point goals. 53 shots on net tonight for the Panthers. 46 saves made by Julian Scalcucci. He was very good again here tonight. 27 shots for the Warriors. 26 saves made by Eric Krzyzewski of Stevens Point. Well, I'm going to wrap it up because, as you've heard tonight, my voice goes away quickly. I can take a break and then come back for a little while. It goes downhill. But hopefully by next Thursday for our next West hockey game, we'll be back to 100% give you the total broadcast you deserve. Apologize again for the voice issues here tonight. But thank you for joining us. Thank our sponsors for being with us. And remind you, the final score, Stevens Point 7, Wausau West 1. This has been Warrior Hockey on 98.9 WXCO.
This has been Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Wausau West Hockey has been brought to you by the Cloverbelt Credit Union, Red Robin Restaurants, Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, the Wausau West Hockey Booster Club, and Coast to Coast Marketing. Thanks for joining us for Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey on your home for the Warriors, 98.9 WXCO.
Corporations who then turned around and gouged consumers for the following several years. Like, did they lower prices? Did they raise wages? Did they invest in American workers? No, they did not. They lined their own pockets. And that is what Donald Trump signed into law himself in 2017. And that is what he and his congressional allies are saying they are going to do again today. And look, I think people are right to be angry about the high cost of living in this country. It is crazy that we are so wealthy. We are a wealthy, wealthy country, but so much of that wealth is just concentrated at the very top that most Americans don't feel it. And the answer is to give more tax cuts to billionaires and corporations? I don't think so.
I'm right there with you. Look, Doge Boy should not be getting a tax cut, a guy who's worth almost half $1 trillion. Sorry, when Doge Boy tells me we need to tighten the belt a little bit, someone's priorities are a little screwed up.
Absolutely right. It's crazy to me that Donald Trump has given the literal richest person in the history of the planet the responsibility of saying which public services are expendable, whose Social Security benefits are wasteful, which veterans' benefits are just a little too much. Elon Musk should not be deciding whether public schools, safe drinking water, clean air, safe highways are worth it. Because he's got a private jet and sends his kids to private schools and doesn't need any of that stuff. He just wants his lower taxes.
Yeah, no, you're right. I got to change directions real quick. As a former OMB official, one of the nominees that Trump has thrown out is this guy, Russ Voigt. And there's a lot of concern about this guy being the budget director. How bad could this be? Because I've been saying while all this smokescreen stuff is going on, while we're following the cat laser, Trump is putting people into positions like OMB who are going to be really, really dangerous and damaging to our government. And while we're watching the cat laser, bad things are going to happen. How bad do you think this guy could be?
Well, he literally wrote the chapter in Project 2025 about OMB and the executive office.
Oh, but wait a second. Hold on. That's not Trump's plan. Yeah. Trump told us he had nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with it. He just happens to nominate to OMB director the guy who literally wrote the chapter in that book about what to do. Look, Russ is a true believer when it comes to slashing public services and protections. He believes that it is wrong that rich people should pay taxes to the public benefit, to the public good. He just thinks it's wrong, and he's a true believer. And it was true when he was the budget director under Trump the first time. It's true in his private writing. He set up a separate think tank when he was out of power to propose massive cuts, including things to veterans' health care benefits and basic things that I think the vast majority of Americans, Republican, Democrat, Independent, all agree we should be doing, right? If you ask the American people, should we be more generous in our veterans' benefits or should we cut veterans' benefits? 80% of Americans are going to say more generous, right? But Russ's vote is in the 20%. And I worry about that. Now, I think that he's going to run into the buzzsaw of American public opinion, which is always what happens when Republicans try to do what they say they want to do. They like you said, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. But if they actually try to cut the basic protections that middle class and working people just rely on in their everyday, you know, the Small Business Administration, Title I funding for their kids' public schools, Medicaid, Medicare, if they actually try to cut these things, I think people are going to be pretty angry. And that's not what they voted for.
It's the hope. And I've been saying, look, we've been saying on the program since Election Day, the solutions will come out of their savagery. When the suffering they impose finally trickles down, the one thing that will trickle down is the pain and suffering by the policies that they impose. Maybe that's going to be that wake-up moment, because I believe in this country, the only time we really come together and really react is when there's a crisis, and I believe they're about to create one.
I think there's some bad ideas that they are going to try to implement, and they, in some ways, the Democrats have gotten in their way of showing the American people who they actually are for. And I think this is the next 2 years is going to be a really interesting test case in whose side are Republicans really on. They have made a big show and talked a big game of being on the side of the very folks who have been left out and left behind for the last 40 years, even though they're the ones, their policies that have left those people out, those same people out. But sure, look, Donald Trump has been effective at saying he is going to look out for people who have been left out and left behind. Well, now he's got to put his money where his mouth is. And I think we're going to see really clearly whose side he's actually on. Is he going to choose the voters who make less than $100,000 who voted for him? Or is he going to choose his big billionaire donors and corporate backers? The tax bill is going to be a perfect example to see who's he really for.
No, but we're going to see out of this big, beautiful bill where the priorities are. But Michael, as always, I appreciate you coming on the program. I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's going on, especially at OMB and elsewhere.
Anytime. Thank you for having me on, and I really appreciate it.
Michael Linden, thanks so much. Senior fellow over at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you ready for what's coming? Are you concerned? Or are you buying the tariff argument? I want to hear your best tariff argument. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, Wausau's home for Up North News Radio.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, lows 5 to 10 below, wind chills near 15 below. Clouds return for tomorrow, some flurries and snow showers in the afternoon and evening, high mid-teens. Mostly cloudy, breezy, scattered flurry Saturday, high upper 20s. Right now, it's zero.
Matt and Air on Air.
Robotaxis made by Zooks are slated to hit the streets of California later on this year. Rides will initially be free for people who agree to test it out. You go first.
Wait, have you ever wanted to drive in a four-person casket with no driver?
My biggest sticking point about this is the name. Zooks is a cartoon character.
Yeah. Do you think when he's driving, he's going...
Matt and Air on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we're starting to hear a little bit about what might be in the big, beautiful bill. And one of them, one of the issues, are the SALT deductions. The state and local tax deduction, Trump took it away, capped it at $10,000, now looking to give some of it back. Maybe to go up to $20,000 for a married couple. Is this a sweetener for Democrats to come along? I don't know that it's enough, but you know, again, we'll see in this game. And understand, Trump has told us this big, beautiful bill is going to somehow help us. His tariff plan is going to make America great again. And in fact, I'm hearing some weird rumblings that he's going to enact the International Economic Emergency Powers Act. And say that, you know, the countries are under attack. And this will give him unilateral authority to impose his tariffs. We will see. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what we're in for. I've asked Carla Walter to come talk with us. She's a senior director of the American Worker Project there at the Center for American Progress. Carla, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So you buying any of this, this big, beautiful bill going to help working people? Because we're going to give you this little deduction back. Are you buying any of this?
I think that we know who Trump is actually after in terms of benefiting for the bill, and it is not working people. I think the vast majority of the bill we'll see is about you know, the very rich and corporate CEOs. And so the balance will be pretty clear, and whether or not there's pennies for the working class and working families generally is not really going to offset the balance there.
Because clearly the message of this election is, you know, the people who showed up to vote bought that Trump was going to be better on the economy. He was going to be better for workers, even though his record, his past, his former presidency was anything but that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we can both learn from the past and we can learn from Project 2025. And we can know that to expect something that is very different, that is very much favoring the wealthy, favoring corporate interests over workers. We can expect that when it comes to labor protections and labor rights. We can expect that when it comes to trade, and we can expect that when it comes to, you know, the Department of Labor and protecting our fundamental protections like overtime and misclassification and wage protections.
But what do you say to the person who goes, well, you know, Donald Trump, his first overture is to reach a hand out to labor with his labor secretary choice, who, you know, obviously the best person you're going to get out of Trump. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we should watch and we should see what happens. I think that with Representative Chavez or former Representative Chavez de Remer, we see that she's in favor of the PRO Act and the Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act, which would allow workers to bargain and exercise their rights on the job. I think, though, there's a question of both how that translates into an administration-wide policy. Trump himself has called himself a right-to-work guy. So I think that there are a lot of stumbling blocks when we can't expect a DOL secretary to solve that. But then there are other really important issues that we need to ask where she stands on, whether it's enforcement of prevailing wage and minimum wage laws, misclassification, supporting robust apprenticeship programs with union involvement, coming to the defense of overtime. And I think her record is much more spotty, and we will see who Trump is appointing to that second level to oversee those programs and oversee if there are advocates there.
Because that's the thing that, you know, I keep saying, look at who he's appointing to these different agencies. For me, whoever he's going to throw at the NLRB as the general counsel there will tell me how it's going to work for labor, because I think that's maybe even a little more important than the head of the Department of Labor.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're going to see Jenna Brusso, the current general counsel, probably fired on day one. And she has been the staunchest advocate Amazing. For working people that we could ever have. And we can guess what sort of replacement he will appoint there. And it is going to be, you know, corporate interest likely that will be set on rolling back all of her advances, whether it is advances to ensure that workers aren't subject to sitting through meetings with management just to assert their right to or convince them not to assert their right to come together in unions, whether it be the important protections for joint employer, all of those things we know will be on the chopping block. And unfortunately, that will be faster because Senators Manchin and Sinema did not replace the outgoing NLRB board member or reappoint the outgoing NLRB board member. So we will not have a progressive majority in the on the board going forward either.
Now, and this is where, you know, when I hear Sean O'Brien, president of the Teamsters, say Democrats have been screwing us, I look at Sinema and Manchin as those Democrats, not the entire Democratic Party, but specifically those two in this instance, because you're right. We could have mitigated some of the damage for a bit of time by ensuring that the folks were still on the NLRB, on the board. And for some odd reason, you know, they jabbed workers in the back, in my view.
Yeah, and it'll have real consequences. Under Biden, we saw far more workers being reinstituted when they were illegally fired because of board orders. We saw union win rates climb. We can expect that when we have an anti-worker NLRB, a lot of that progress will be reversed.
And what does that mean, you know, as someone who's the director of the American Worker Project, what does that mean for workers across the board, not just union workers, but all workers? What does that mean?
Well, we know when unions are strong in specific industries, everyone's wages are higher. We know that the NLRB doesn't just protect the right of workers that are unionized to come together and talk with each other about pay and protections, but we also know that non-union workers need those protections too, so that they can talk with their colleagues. When we don't have an active NLRB, all workers are under threat.
I'm not looking forward to the next 6 months to begin, and then, well, the next 6 months after that. But what do you make of this talk? And I just talked with Michael Linden a bit ago about tariffs and this idea that somehow Trump's going to use these tariffs, going to use the International Economic Emergency Powers Act to enact his tariffs, that somehow this is going to bring manufacturing back. Because the story I've told is, you know, I've been told is this is going to bring those jobs back. And then you union people can go organize those. And we're going to recreate what my grandparents' generation built and that prosperous working class of the past. And it's all because Trump and his tariffs. You buying any of that?
You know, tariffs are a tool. And they should be implemented smartly in targeted ways to support good jobs in industries that we want to support in the U.S. And so that means thinking strategically, what are the industries and then what else are we doing? So we saw the Biden administration really lean into the fact that we're going to invest it. The federal government is also going to invest in key industries, and they're going to push those industries to be creating good union jobs. And so it was it is this sort of manifold approach of the government to be supporting good jobs at every juncture that really translates into real organizing power. But Trump sees this as a cudgel for his political enemies. This is about fentanyl. This is about borders. This is about, it's about X, Y, and Z, and it is not actually about manufacturing and bringing back good manufacturing jobs. And so when you see this sort of like, it is a tool that I'm going to use for everything, then it becomes a tool for nothing.
That's an excellent point, because I've got friends who they seem to think come January 20th, everything's going to be great. Prices are going to come down. Wages are going to go up. All the good things are going to go up. All the bad things are going to go down. And the reality is based on what I'm seeing, based on, you know, the wide range of comments that Trump has made, a lot of the just all over the map thinking seems to be making all the things that are bad worse. And all the things that would be good, well, worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, overtime is a real example of the sort of risks we see of a second Trump administration. So President Biden raised the overtime threshold to a really meaningful threshold for, I think it's approximately 4 million American workers would be covered. And we saw a Texas judge that it was a Trump appointee strike that down. Now it's on DOL to defend that rule. And that is where Secretary Chavez de Remer will come in. What we can expect probably, though, if we learn from his last administration, is that won't happen. That rule will go away. And those workers who would see real life benefits would see the benefits, you know, that sort of like, I'll see the benefit tomorrow of my hard work. That's
going to go away. Yeah. But also, you know, you brought up overtime. I've had people tell me, well, but Rick, you know, he's not going to tax overtime.
Yeah. Well, I think getting overtime is more valuable than not taxing overtime.
So when you say that, what do you mean?
I mean that in order to even have a conversation about whether or not you're getting taxed on something, first you have to collect those wages. And if you're not getting those wages in the first place, it doesn't really matter whether they're taxed or not.
So are you arguing that they're going to somehow, you know, fiddle with the system, that you're not going to get overtime ever again? Because, you know, we've become accustomed to the 40-hour work week. Me as a union guy, I've always gotten overtime after 8, thanks to my union contract. And when I started in the workforce years ago, that was the norm across the industry. We are now in that, you know, it's 40 hours. But they seem to be moving us to the 160-hour work month. is that what we're talking about?
I mean, you see, like, it's not only the rule that helps non-union workers as well collect overtime. It's also this sort of flirtation that Republicans have for a long time with comp time. So let's replace overtime with vacation that your boss may or may not approve. And I think that we know that this is the path that we're treading down. And we know that, you know, this is going to be a risk. This is a risk for workers across industries. We haven't yet talked about the risk to federal workers, too, who are really, you know, in the crosshairs and will be from the beginning. But I think all of these things are up in the air about what's going to happen.
Well, you were looking at my notes because, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on Schedule F and the Making Patronage Great Again policy that we saw coming out of Project 2025, because I have a lot of friends in the federal workforce who are very concerned that their livelihoods are on the chopping block and that we're going to privatize large chunks of our government. And you're going to have, you know, people like Doge Boy deciding who gets jobs and doing what Doge Boy did to Twitter, which is cutting, you know, far and deep into employment, which means not only do the workers get screwed over, but we as citizens and people who need from our government, we're going to get screwed over. Do you have some idea of, I guess, what are you looking for? I mean, you know, when this stuff rolls out, how will we know it? Will we see it right away? You know, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's first the attack on federal employees unions we saw that Trump lodged last time around, whether it was, you know, having a right to representation during discipline procedures, the ability for workers to meet public government workers to meet with each other with their union union in convenient locations at convenient times. So we'll definitely see all that. Then Schedule F is next on the, you know, on the agenda. And that is, you know, there is going to be activity to do it. And it will, you know, we'll see a more than 10 times increase in the number of political appointees. And as you point out, that is both about whether or not workers are able to stay on the job, experienced, smart workers are able to stay on the job who know these programs and know how to get work done. But then, you know, if you're having a political appointee take over the reins from somebody who's long experienced in overseeing and ensuring that unemployment insurance is working right, or workers' comp, or, you know, all these programs, enforcement of prevailing wage, and that is being politicized, you not only have, you know, the political payback increasing, but you also have the competence threshold plummeting for these programs that everyday Americans count on.
Yeah, you know, I've heard people make that argument that, well, we've got the really competent people and you're going to bring incompetence in. I fear that that's not the reality. I fear that we bring in really competent people who have the explicit intention on destroying the very thing that they're in charge of. Because I watched during the whole run-up of Project 2025 and the vetting of people. The think tank world, and I'm sure as you know better than anyone, the think tank world got behind Trump early. They put out their wet dream list in a 900-page document, and they were actively seeking people for these positions in the event that Trump does this Schedule F. So I fear, and maybe you share it or maybe you don't, I fear you get really highly competent people who know what they want to do to these agencies and how bad they want to destroy them. I fear you get those people in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's fair. I think there will be folks that are coming in there with the express purpose to destroy these programs and destroy all sorts of programs. It's not just going to be pro-worker programs. It will be the actual program that's being administered because they don't believe in government and they don't believe in government providing the sort of services that we should pay for and should expect to see. The other thing is we will see, though, that I think we're already seeing the infighting within the administration. This was like signature of the last Trump administration as well. And I think we will see the sort of like infighting and inability. And that will, to a certain extent, slow some things down. But to the extent that it's paralyzing government programs, that is also a very bad thing.
Now, in my inner circle of friends and advisors and folks that I talk to, we're running a pool on how long it is before the Trump Doge Boy divorce happens. Before the very public breakup of the bromance that's been going on between Trump and Elon Musk. I've got 3 months.
That's fair. Although we're seeing all the other like corporate interests sort of bending a knee right now too, in a way that we didn't see last time around. And so I have some real fear about what that means and who's going to be waiting in the wings to take that mantle.
Yeah. So last question I've got for you in the last line of questioning is, you know, is there a way to stop the bad that's coming? You know, are Democrats going to be able to put up a resistance, or if Republicans are in line, do they ride the steamroller right over the backs of working people? And we end up back in the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s.
You know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough 2 years because we have no power. Hopefully 2 years from now, we do have some. I think we need to take the case to everyday Americans when the administration is not living up to their, you know, this sort of like espoused commitment to the working class. We saw that work to a limited extent the last time around when, you know, for example, orders to allow tip stealing were like, there was an administrative effort to allow tip stealing. And there was a really successful campaign around the fact that people were sort of found this to be completely egregious. And I think we need to figure out ways to strategically break through. But at the same time, I think we also need to be fighting at the state and local level for some of the protections that we need. No. And I think those state and local fights will be essential. We won't be able to win every single one of them, but for the ones we can win, we can make a difference to working people.
You know, I had forgot all about the tip stealing thing. It's amazing how he went from employers can steal tips to we're not going to tax them. I'm stunned we're in the position we're in, that given the 4 years that we lived under during Trump, he's back.
And he's back, and, you know, the conversations are crazier than ever. So we're talking about renaming the Gulf of Mexico and buying up Greenland. So, like, I think that there is also this, like, how do we break through the noise and really sort of get the stakes of what's happening across to working people.
And that is our goal over the next 4 years. I want to try and stay away from the chaos and focus on our lives getting better. And when they're not, offering solutions on how, when we get rid of this, how we actually move forward. Because as I've been saying, the solutions will come out of the savagery of their suffering. And we'll see. But Carla, as always, I appreciate the work that you guys do there at the American Worker Project. Great stuff. Hope people check out the website, AmericanProgress.org. But Carla Walter, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you excited about the coming 4 years? Are you excited about the potential of across the board tariffs? And maybe we're going to bring tip stealing back. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. Do national security concerns outweigh the right of workers to form a union? That question was being debated on this day in labor history. The year was 2003. The head of the Transportation Security Administration, James Loy, made the case that collective bargaining would be an impediment to the war on terrorism. He signed an order that prohibited unionization by passenger and baggage screeners. The move was just one of several that eroded federal workers' rights in the name of national security in the aftermath of 9/11. The TSA was founded in the months after the 9/11 attacks by the Bush administration. Prior to the TSA, screening was done by private contractors run by the airlines. With the new organization, more than 45,000 screeners became part of the federal workforce. Massachusetts Senator Teddy Kennedy disagreed with the Bush administration's position that these workers could not join a union. He released a statement saying, "It's not Homeland Security, it's union busting." The TSA workers did not give up their fight to join a union. For the better part of a decade, they continued to organize and make their case. In 2011, the workers voted to become part of the American Federation of Government Employees. It was the largest union election by federal workers in United States history. There are limitations to the union, however, such as the screeners cannot go on strike, but the union can advocate for safe and fair workplace conditions. When the union was finally recognized, President of AFGE John Gage issued a statement. He declared, "Today marks the recognition of a fundamental human right for 40,000 patriotic federal employees who have been disenfranchised since the inception of the agency. Today, nearly 16,000 screeners have joined the union." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I gotta tell you, I had forgotten all about the tip stealing of the last Trump administration. Just like, you know, during the break, I'm thinking about, you know, the person that he had put in charge of the wage and hour division, the people who go after wage theft. That person was accused of wage theft. And, you know, all of those things are going to come back. All those stories, all that chaos is going to be back. And ultimately, it's not going to help working people. It's not going to help us. And as I've been saying, look, you know, come January 20th, we're going to be told, you know, from that point forward, greatest economy ever. And he may actually invoke the International Economic Emergency Powers Act to do his tariffs. And if he does, he'll do it in some way. This is where my mind is going. He'll do it in some way that he can immediately claim it's making things better and can immediately claim with a couple of companies, you know, announcing some investments. Let's see, look, it's working. The question is, will those jobs be real? Will the investment actually happen? And will it trickle down to average everyday working people? His record, not good on this. Not good at all. We lived through it. We saw the rhetoric. We saw what a good PR pitch guy can do. He is, and this is where I give him credit. He's special. He's special in that he can convince his supporters that they're better off when actually they were worse off. He can convince them that what they saw with their own eyes didn't happen. I've joked he could sell a woman wearing white gloves in her wedding dress in the desert. He could sell her a ketchup popsicle. Our job going forward, our mission going forward, is to pay attention to what is real instead of what's being thrown at us, the chaos that he will bring. And we're going to see these fights. I joke that, you know, the bromance between Trump and Doge Boy, that's gonna come to a head. We're already hearing reports that Trump's tired of having him around so much. That could be an interesting sideshow. And part of me goes, would it be planned? Is it something that's wanted? Because understand, the think tank world, the billionaire-funded think tank world, they're all in. All of the things they've been dreaming about doing, and I've said this before, they're going to get an opportunity to move on. And not just legislatively, but from inside the machine. They are going to have access to the very real power of the organizations. And not just the director, but of the marching of the soldiers. One of the things that caught my attention about Project 2025 from the very beginning, and I think we were one of the few places talking about it before the mainstream media picked it up. I picked it up because of the fact that they were recruiting people for different jobs. Send us your resume. And while you're sending us your resume, send us your social media accounts and send us all this information so we can properly vet you. They were already building an army of minions to go in and do the bureaucratic work. The person that answers the phone. They were already thinking about how to destroy the machine from within. And which is why I say, you know, where they're making patronage great again, because you've got to be sufficiently loyal to get one of these positions going forward. It's no longer going to be about a civil service exam. It's no longer going to be about competence for sure. It's going to be about loyalty first and foremost. And as I said with Carla, my fear is that the loyalty, yes, you're going to get the most loyal, but that they are competent. And that their goal in the swinging door of our government is to destroy and reap rewards on corporate interests, so that they can then swing out of government and into very lucrative corporate roles and being paid for their allegiance. Thanked, if you will. Because corporate America hates government. Well, at least government that holds them accountable. They love a government that bails them out when they screw things up. They love a government that aids them in holding off competition. They love that. But any accountability, they'll have none of. So for me, the concern, and it should be for all federal workers and all citizens, ultimately it's all about we the citizens, is how much damage can they do with that? We're going to see. We're going to see the movie happen. We're going to see fascism American style. We're going to see what blind loyalty does. And what a business government looks like. And why? Because we didn't want to vote for the black woman. That's what I come up with. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What are you paying attention to over the next several weeks and months? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Also, check out freespeech.org for our video content. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. While signing executive orders today, President Trump pardoned some anti-abortion activists. CBS's Christopher Cruz.
Trump said it was a great honor to sign the pardons. He said what he called peaceful pro-life protesters should not have been prosecuted. Among those pardoned were people involved in an invasion and blockade of an abortion clinic in Washington in 2020.
CBS's Natalie Brand says a federal judge in Seattle has temporarily blocked Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship.
On Capitol Hill, the president's allies doubled down on Trump's executive order, introducing a bill to make it law.
I'm predicting and forecasting that when this gets to the U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court's going to rule that this particular piece of legislation is constitutional.
That's Republican Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona. Fears of Trump deportations are being inflamed by threatening letters sent to farm worker groups in California.
The postcard stamped with the ICE website arrived at